I'm Kristen Conger.
And I'm Caroline Irvin.
And we're hosts of the podcast Stuff Mom Never Told You that gets down to the business of being women from every imaginable angle.
That's right. Kristen and I skillfully decode the biology, psychology, and sociology of ladies and gents from their evolutionary past to millennial present to better understand all of that stuff Mom never told you.
No offense, moms. Now be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to How Stuff Works Now. I'm your host, Lauren Vogelbaum, a researcher and writer here at How Stuff Works. Every week, I'm bringing you three stories from our team about the weird and wondrous advances we've seen in science, technology, and culture. This week, we've got a couple updates on autonomous vehicles. A man with quadriplegia has been granted America's first semi-autonomous vehicle restricted driver's license, and he's got a retrofitted Corvette to go with it. Unrelated, in Japan, a car company is bending its driverless technology to that most odious of tasks, having to shuffle forward while waiting in line. But first, Holly Fry of Stuff You Missed in History class has an architectural etymology lesson for us. There may have been a real family with a very real vacation house who inspired the phrase keeping up with the Joneses.
Keeping up with the Joneses is the colloquialism that comes to life when neighbors and frenemies engage in consumer one-upmanship. The purchased status symbols range from small things like brand-name sunglasses to large, such as vacation houses, but the point is always to outdo the other. But now, the grand American castle that may have in fact inspired this saying has become a crumbling ruin that sold for a measly $120,000 at auction in September. There was an actual Jones family who built a 7,690-square-foot mansion in Rhinebeck, New York. It was a summer vacation spot for well-heeled, wealthy families from New York City. Elizabeth Schermerhorn Jones commissioned the formidable brick and slate structure in 1853, situated on her 80-acre plot overlooking the Hudson River. She was related to two prominent New York families. On one side, the Astors, prosperous American industrialists, and on the other, Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Edith Wharton. Jones's red brick vacation home, called Windclift, was one of the preeminent examples of Norman Romanesque architecture, a style popularized in 11th and 12th century France and England. It featured arches and towers and an asymmetrical style that resulted in formidable angles. It was the most impressive house along the river, sporting 24 rooms with ornate finishes, including Tiffany skylights. Its sweeping grounds boasted tennis courts and boat and carriage houses, and the mansion was so ostentatious that it is believed to have single-handedly prompted a building boom. Wealthy neighbors expanded and remodeled their own homes to, quote, keep up with the Joneses. And this trend continued through the 1920s, but the Great Depression dismantled it. Windcliff's recent sale brings to light the struggle that successive owners have had to keep the mega-sized mansion in good repair. The estate has shrunk from that massive 80 acres to just 2.5 acres, and significant parts of the home structure have fallen in, leaving massive piles of bricks and debris. The once well-tended shrubbery has turned wild and overgrown the grounds. What would the Joneses think of that?
Next up, staff editor Christopher Hasiotis brings us a story from our longtime freelance writer, Lori L. Dove. I miss you, Lori. The first autonomous vehicle driver's license in the United States has been granted to a former race car driver with quadriplegia. It marks impressive advances in autonomous car technology and also demonstrates how far we have to go before driverless cars will be widespread.
Driverless cars are coming. That much we know. But will you need a special driver's license to operate one? Will you have to take a test all over again? Will you have to wait in line at the dun-dun-dun DMV? While state governments here in the United States haven't worked out all the kinks, or maybe even any kinks, we have gotten one step closer to licensing these pilots of driverless vehicles. And it's all thanks to one quadriplegic race car driver who in late September received a state of Nevada autonomous vehicle restricted driver's license. As the first person in the United States to receive such a license, Sam Schmidt, an Indy race car driver and racing team owner who was paralyzed from the neck down after a car crash 16 years ago, is free to navigate his custom-built semi-autonomous Corvette on public roads, and control its movements with breath and voice commands. When Schmidt gets behind the wheel of his Corvette, he starts the engine with the sound of his voice, accelerates or brakes with a sip or puff air tube, and tilts his head to turn the car around a corner. This retrofitted Corvette, called SAM, was designed especially for him by a Colorado-based U.S. Air Force performance lab called Arrow Electronics. After issuing the unique license to Schmidt, Nevada Lieutenant Governor Mark Hutchinson called it a catalyst for even more transforming technologies. Earlier in 2016, Schmidt, who still races cars despite his quadriplegia, reached 152 miles per hour during a demonstration at the Indy 500. He also successfully navigated the sharp switchbacks of the Pikes Peak International Hill Climb, the country's second oldest auto race. Although Schmidt's driver's license is groundbreaking, it does come with restrictions. When operating the car on public roads, for instance, he must drive behind an Arrow Electronics pilot car and be accompanied by a licensed driver who can take control of the vehicle if necessary. Schmidt also isn't allowed to drive when ice or snow are present on roadways. Still, Schmidt's license is another step towards determining the landscape of our autonomous car future. It's also another great example of how technology can benefit those of us with physical disabilities. Finally, how will a race car driver used to outrageous speeds handle being back on the road? In a recent CNN interview, Schmidt said, "So far I haven't honked, but I might have to do that soon."
Finally this week, I've got a cutting-edge tech story that marks the first time that I've really pondered the future of queuing. Nissan is using their driver assistance software to build self-piloting chairs to improve our experience of waiting in line.
Do you hate walking, standing in line, paying attention to your surroundings? Well, Nissan's got the chair for you. Nissan is bending their driver assistant software called ProPilot to making waiting in line, quote, easy and fun, end quote. In one of their 2017 minivans available in Japan, drivers can enable the ProPilot system to help them respond to traffic and stay in their lane when they foresee being distracted by what's going on inside the car. But what else are you going to do with autopilot software once it's out there, hopefully keeping people safer on the roads and paving the way for a future of driverless cars? Nissan's answer? Make self-driving chairs! The ProPilot chair doesn't really give the sitter much of a choice of where to go, but some restaurants in Japan are using them to advance waiting diners along a preset path so they don't have to shuffle forward manually when the party at the front of the line gets seated. The chairs are equipped with cameras to maintain a set distance between themselves, and when the one in the front moves, they all move. When the people sitting in the front of the line stand up, the unoccupied chairs move to the back of the line. Here in the U.S., the ridiculous wait times at popular restaurants, iPhone releases, and even congressional hearings have prompted the rich and impatient to hire homeless people as their line placeholders. Instead of improving the systems that necessitate standing around for hours, technology like this could make the waits more comfortable. It sounds a bit silly, but Nissan is envisioning a world where these chairs could be used as curatorial aids in museums, shuttling visitors along a pre-established route, or as tidying tools, allowing chairs to automatically resituate themselves after being pushed away from desks or meeting tables, or perhaps even as a means of moving through outdoor spaces, which could prove useful to Japan's aging population. And certainly, it brings us one step closer to getting what Pixar promised us in WALL-E, moving chairs that enable us to spend more time slurping milkshakes and staring at our mobile devices.
That's our show for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Subscribe now for more of the latest science news and send us links to anything you'd like to hear us cover. Plus a Halloween costume idea because I am coming up so dry this year. You can send us an email at nowpodcast@howstuffworks.com. And of course, for lots more stories like these, head on over to our home planet, now.howstuffworks.com.